You are Locked On Bears, your daily Chicago Bears podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The Chicago Bears are rolling with continuity in the front office, but a lot is set to change in the coming months in what will be another very different offseason. This is Locked On Bears, and I'm your host, Lauren Cox. I'm an analyst for Pro Football Focus, and I'm here to bring you your daily, in-depth Chicago Bears news and analysis. You can follow me on Twitter, at CoxSports1. You can follow the podcast on Twitter, at Locked On Bears. You can like Locked On Bears on Facebook, or even join the Locked On Bears Facebook group. On the show today, we will be joined by Larry Dyer from Bears Talk Underground to start to look ahead just a little bit, big picture, at this offseason as the team continues with Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy at the helm. We'll look at some of the different dynamics in their relationship and how that will shape the Bears' big decisions this offseason, as well as just how different this offseason will be and some of the new challenges this Bears leadership team will face. My conversation here with Larry is just a short snippet of an over two-hour conversation he and I had for his podcast, Bears Talk Underground. Highly encourage you head over there and check out the whole thing. If you really want some long-form, in-depth Bears analysis, it was really part of a full year in review. We looked back at this Bears season. We talked a lot about the Ted Phillips, George McCaskey, Ryan Pace, Matt Nagy press conferences as well. Really ran the whole gamut on all of the pressing Bears topics of the start of the offseason. So it's the Bears Talk Underground podcast, wherever you find your shows. But here, we're going to start looking a little bit more forward with Larry Dyer from Bears Talk Underground.
Who are you bringing back next year? I mean, because there are guys, we got a lot of guys under contract and everything, but who's gone right now? Who are you, who's going to be a salary cap casualty? Who's gone just for the sake of being gone, like we don't want him here anymore, kind of thing? You know, if you're Ryan Pace, and unfortunately Ryan Pace is still Ryan Pace, and these are your decisions to make, you know, what sacrifices or decisions are you making for this team?
I'll admit I haven't dove in all the way in, but I know, like, off the top of my head, Jimmy Graham's contract is probably one that if he doesn't retire, they'll move on from him. He's going to be 35 and had an all right season, but just I think the plan was only 1 year from him and cut him in the second year. I'd move on from Buster Skrine as well. I thought he's been particularly weak as a slot cornerback, and there's some room for cap savings there. Potentially Bobby Massey at right tackle. I mean, they were able to kind of get by fine without him. They need to upgrade the position anyway, and there's some potential to save some cap space there. And if I'm being totally honest with you, I mean, it's not going to happen because Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy are back, and they're still going to keep trying to win. But I'd explore trade options for guys like even Khalil Mack and Eddie Jackson. Just see what kind of value. I don't want to blow up and gut my entire defense, but especially with the salary cap projected to be a little bit lower and feeling like Jackson has not been great the last couple of seasons, not bad safety by any means, but maybe not the $60 million guy that they paid him to be. And also just Khalil Mack being so expensive, and he's been playing really well, but I think we're seeing that he isn't as valuable to this defense as we might have thought he was. That they, even when he is playing at an extremely high level, it hasn't had the ripple effect throughout the rest of the defense. So I'm not saying I'm actively just trying to take whatever I could get from these guys, but if I could get a first round pick or something, I'd explore, you know, moving on from one of my more expensive defensive players and using that draft pick and that compensation plus some salary cap space to fix some other holes elsewhere. And you know, try and, if I'm not blowing up the whole thing, try and get a better quarterback, you know, try and get some other things squared away. But there's going to be a lot of change this offseason. I think they're going to be forced to make some salary cap decisions with at least a few of these guys. And we'll see exactly where that number ends up.
Yeah, I think that's definitely where I would kind of fall, like pretty much everybody that you put on that list. And I'm not exactly, you know, clamoring to bring back Javon Wims or Anthony Miller.
I believe they're both under contract
for 1 year.
Yes.
So, you know, if there is a salary cap hit attached to that, it can't be very much. So that would be a penalty I'd be willing to take, you know, based on what's going to happen with Allen Robinson. So it's just like, you know, can we talk him into coming back? You know, what's the situation there and everything? Another question that they so eloquently dodged today as well when asking about the future with Allen Robinson. It was one of their other favorite phrases, aside from collaboration and whatnot, was everything is on the table. You know, when it came to Allen Robinson, when it came to Mitch, when it came to the quarterbacks and veterans, everything is on the table. Everything is on the table. Everything is on the table.
And to be fair, I mean, they can't tell you, yep, here's the contract we're going to sign. I mean, I realize when it comes to free agency that that's a little bit more the norm, but like, especially with how disgruntled Robinson was in his last press conference, kind of saying we've had 365 days to do this and they haven't wanted to. I mean, we could have got a little bit more there in terms of like Ryan Pace saying he could have said it's a big priority for us to try and get a deal done with Allen Robinson.
Exactly.
No guarantees that it's going to happen, but that's a priority for us. Or I don't know that there's much harm in saying, you know, it's not something we're not interested in bringing back Mitch Trubisky this year. I mean, I know it would be headlines, but like, I have to feel like they've already made that decision and whether or not they're interested or not. And you can either say, yeah, you know, we're hoping to get a deal done, or, you know, we're probably going to go in a different direction this year. And it didn't seem like there was much reason. There's no competitive advantage there. It's one of the many frustrations from the press conference and just in general with continuing on the Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy train. But there's a lot more we can get to in what those two have on their plate this offseason, including the NFL draft in the world of COVID still continuing. And after a COVID college football season, a lot of different conflicting dynamics we'll get into next on Locked On Bears. I just got in another shipment of Built Bars, and I'll tell you what, these guys just don't miss. They've got 18 delicious flavors. I've tried almost all of them up to this point, and I have not had a single one that wasn't phenomenal. They taste like candy bars. That's why they're clearly the best tasting protein bars ever, but they're also good for you. They only have around 130 calories per bar, only 4 grams of sugar, but they're loaded up with 17 grams of protein. You cannot beat this combination of healthy and delicious anywhere else. I'm telling you, you gotta try it for yourself. Go to BuiltBar.com and use our promo code LOCKEDON and you'll get 20% off your next order. That's promo code LOCKEDON, Locked On, for 20% off at BuiltBar.com.
So when we get to the draft, what are you looking for?
You gotta find a quarterback, right? I mean, you can't. It just feels like it's malpractice if you go through this year and again do not draft some quarterback.
It's a great word, yeah. Malpractice.
Like, it's. I mean, when you're picking 20th, you're not gonna get one of the top guys, and I don't know. I mean, I don't know that you take a quarterback in the first round, depending on how the board shakes out. I mean, there's a lot. I haven't done really virtually any in-depth draft work in any of the quarterbacks to be able to tell you. I think, you know, Notre Dame or the North Dakota Trey Lance, you know, he'll be there and I think the Bears should take him. I mean, I just don't know. Or Mac Jones from Alabama. It's a deep quarterback class, at least at the top. There's some real strength there. So in theory, the Bears should be able to get one in that late first, early second round potential range, but you got to upgrade the offensive line. I think you could use another draft pick at tackle. You could use another draft pick at a pass rusher position. You got to get the secondary improved as well. And there's a lot of work to do here. And we'll see how much they prioritize, like, all in on winning now and signing big free agents and veterans at positions and what positions they're willing to kind of stick and roll with rookies, kind of like they did last year at cornerback and tight end and wide receiver even.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's what it kind of boils down to. And even though Nick Foles is the extent of the quarterbacks on our roster right now, I would much prefer to go after a tackle in that first round to protect the quarterback as opposed to, you know, I would almost feel like we were settling for Mac Jones if we took him at 20. I'm kind of back on the train that I was in back in 2017 where I didn't want us to draft a quarterback that year because we had nothing built around him. It was Jordan Howard, and that was it in 20, because that was the year that we drafted Tariq Cohen, so we didn't even have him yet. So Jordan Howard was the extent of our offense going into 2017. He was the last thing that I wanted. I wanted Jamal Adams to keep building our defense, and instead we trade up, give up four picks to draft the wrong quarterback. And, you know, it's like I never wanted a quarterback in the first place, let alone Trubisky or anything. I think you and I went back and forth because you didn't like it when I said I don't want Watson, you know, going into that draft and everything like that. It's just that, you know, I'm more in the fact that I want to build up that offensive line. So God forbid we can protect Nick Foles if he's the best we got going into this thing, then, you know, having him get beat to death throughout the year like he did this year.
Well, two things. One, very disrespectful to Tyler Bray, who I think is also under contract for next season. And also very disrespectful to all of the elite weapons they had for Mitch Trubisky back in 2017, including the likes of, you know, Josh Bellamy. I think they had, they still have Kendall Wright at that point. I mean, Deion Sims. That was a roster, man.
Yeah, Marcus Cooper. No, he was a DB.
Marcus Wheaton.
Wheaton, that's it. Marcus Wheaton.
Dontrell Inman. I just probably just got the roster up. Deion Sims, Adam Shaheen, Benny Cunningham in the backfield. Oh, man.
Yeah. We had some horses on that team, bro. For sure. Yeah. God, that was a mess. Absolute wrong time to take a quarterback, man. It absolutely was. And they went all in.
Well, and I think somebody asked this during the press conference with Pace, I think. I don't remember the exact way they worded it, but like similar situation to now. You have a head coach heading into the final year with a lot of pressure to win now and a strong need to draft a potential rookie quarterback of the future, but, you know, some really conflicting dynamics there with a quarterback opening and a potential lame duck head coach. I mean, this is – we're in some similar – I mean, like to your point – they're much more built around the quarterback right now. I mean, we'll see how that changes this offseason with Allen Robinson and the offensive line, et cetera. But, like, they are in a better spot than they were in 2017. But it is another potential lame duck coach here where you could draft a rookie this year and then have that rookie get two head coaches in his first 2 years, two offenses, two everything.
Yeah, and then another reason why, you know, if we had to get rid of one of them, Pace should have been the one to go because he took three swings at this quarterback thing and we didn't get any of them right. So, you know, we got Glennon. That was a big no. Then Trubisky, talented kid, but just not a professional, you know, franchise quarterback. He'll probably be a backup the rest of his career. And then bringing in Nick Foles, you know, that's basically like the only quarterback strike against Matt Nagy because that's the only one he had any kind of collaboration on. And, you know, but it was Pace who made all those decisions. We'll get rid of Jay Cutler. We'll bring in Mike Glennon. We'll move up and ignore Pat Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. We're going to get Trubisky, and we're going to bring in Nick Foles to compete with Trubisky. Those were all bad moves.
You could, I mean, if you wanted to play devil's advocate, you could make the argument that, well, perhaps Mike Glennon was a John Fox, not unilateral decision, but a John Fox influence, and that Ryan Pace felt like he had to sign some quarterback to disguise his desire for Mitch Trubisky. I mean, maybe that's not the best process, but perhaps Ryan Pace didn't truly see Mike Glennon as a long-term quarterback solution, which it has its own flaws, but I'm kind of reaching as devil advocate here. And then also that, you know, Nick Foles was a Matt Nagy decision in part, so that's not purely Ryan Pace's quarterback evaluation. Right. And then, you know, Mitch Trubisky was the consensus top quarterback in that draft. It wasn't like it wasn't like unanimous over the top. Everybody thought he would be the best one for sure, but like other GMs had Trubisky as the top quarterback. A lot of people in the media had Trubisky as the top quarterback. You know, Watson was no guarantee. Patrick Mahomes was certainly a complete wild card. So like from a process standpoint, it wasn't like Ryan Pace was completely went on a limb and took this quarterback that nobody thought would be good or be a top pick and just completely was this idiot that no one agreed with. I mean, a lot of people thought it was a great pick and a great decision at the time. So, like, it didn't pan out. But, like, you can make excuses easy enough for Ryan Pace. I mean, I realize that that's what those are. But, like, you could say, I mean, you can weigh that versus some of the other late-round picks that he has found and some of the free agent success that they've had with other players and say, okay, well, maybe he has some eye for evaluating talent and just has had extenuating circumstances at quarterback that, yes, he deserves criticism for and has obviously gotten wrong, but maybe it's not purely a 100% reflection that this guy doesn't know quarterbacks. He's just had other factors play into those decisions.
Again, like process-wise, did they go about it the right way throughout the whole process?
Not even a little bit, no.
Yeah, that's why, you know, even more so, like, again, you can look at the results of the quarterbacks that they and the results of their wins and losses, but, like, have they gone about things always in the correct ways? And it sure doesn't feel like it. It doesn't mean they can't or won't get it right this offseason, but this year, much like last year, going to have some new obstacles for every NFL team to get through, and it's going to make this quarterback decision and so much more that much more difficult and just kind of challenging and fun to try and figure out. We'll try and look ahead at some of the challenges that could be coming while also looking back at Nick Foles and Mitch Trubisky last year and how that shapes what the Bears do moving forward. Keep it locked right here on Locked On Bears. With the Bears out of the playoffs, I know you don't have as much reason to tune in, but if you want to make the divisional round weekend exciting again, then get in on some action at betonline.ag. It's the number one place we trust, and they have tons of different ways to play this weekend. Odds on almost anything you can think of, most passing yards in this round, most receiving yards, most rushing yards, of course, your traditional spreads, your point totals, over-unders, money lines, and so much more. Will a wild card team make the Super Bowl? Will any game go into overtime? Will there be a successful onside kick? You name it, they've got it at Bet Online. Don't sit on the sidelines anymore. Get in on the action. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag. And use our promo code LOCKEDON to receive a 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts. It's going to be a fun offseason. I mean, maybe not as much for the Bears, but it's going to be a fun offseason in the NFL. So I'm looking forward to seeing how this plays out.
I am too. And I'm interested to see how the offseason actually goes. Will, now that you know, I mean, even though we're getting more cases every day and all that kind of stuff, now that we've kind of got a handle on COVID, or at least a handle on how to get to daily life in the NFL with COVID, you know, will there be OTAs? Will there be mini camps and stuff like that this year that probably hurt a lot of teams this year for not having it? And, you know, having a regular offseason program versus what they were subjected to out of caution in this offseason.
And there's already rumors that perhaps the NFL scouting combine won't happen because of so many people in that, you know, in that space. And, you know, do you count 40-yard dashes if they're wearing masks? You know what I mean? Or, like, and how that's going to work. And you talk about that influencing teams like the Bears if you're looking at a quarterback, you know. If you're a certain team that maybe puts either, you know, a lot of stock in the combine or too much stock in the combine and let that influence your decisions, or maybe you're a team that has figured out something in the combine that actually does tell you something about whether a player's going to be good or not. I mean, there's all sorts of debates over just how valuable those measurements are. And if you just don't get those, or you only get pro day measurements, which aren't always 100% accurate, there's a lot of potential here for COVID to still shake up free agency and the draft. And hopefully by OTAs and mini camps and stuff, a vaccine distribution has gone far enough that football players are able to get that pretty well back to normal. But I'm not getting my hopes up too high for anything at this point.
Yeah, especially since I'm hearing that everyday folks like me and you probably won't get a try at the vaccine till like the summer or early fall or something like that. Doesn't exactly breed a lot of confidence that things are going to change anytime soon.
Well, football players are essential workers, so, you know, we got to get
them. Of course they are.
High priority.
There's billions of dollars left on the table if those guys sit at home and do nothing this year. So, yeah, that's not going to happen. So, I mean, you saw how they forced those kids to play football in college this year. And speaking of which, for 1AA schools like my alma mater, Western Illinois, their season starts next month in February.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, we still got another whole college football season left to go on the lower level. So, and, you know, football is not exactly done yet.
And scouting some of these players is going to be different when you have Ohio State playing a half a season of, you know, of Justin Fields tape and all those players. I mean, you have very different sample sizes now for different players depending on how many games their school was able to play. And like you said, at the lower levels, like if those guys have to turn around and play in the spring and then go right into mini camps and stuff, there's obviously going to be some challenges there, and teams are going to be trying to get that tape on that. I mean, the draft process is inevitably affected already by COVID-19. It's just a matter of how different it ends up being and how that affects teams' evaluations, because it certainly was already a little bit funky last year, and now we sort of have a full year of abnormal draft preparation.
What's funny to me, though, speaking of COVID-19 and its impact in the offseason, that, you know, I'm not so sure the Bears got that pick wrong when they picked Foles over Cam Newton. I think the only one that we missed out on, to be completely honest with you, is Andy Dalton. Like, I was actually kind of high on the Bears bringing in Dalton to compete with Trubisky, and I think hindsight 2020, he's probably the one we should have gone after instead of Foles.
You know, I think the jury's still out on Jameis Winston in that regard. I mean, I know
that's true.
And then, you know, the likes of Tom Brady, Philip Rivers, Teddy Bridgewater, I mean, they weren't, how much they were actually options, we don't know, but clearly the Bears weren't interested in quarterbacks that were above and beyond better than Mitch Trubisky. They wanted him to have competition. So, like, that's where I still get bothered by the Foles thing, is, like, they had opportunities to clearly upgrade that spot, but instead they wanted to go somewhere where they could still compete with Trubisky and placate him and still give him another chance, as opposed to prioritizing having the best possible quarterback on the field in 2020.
Yeah, and I think the way that I would rationalize it was that bringing in somebody that's supposedly on the level or maybe just a little bit better was supposed to motivate Mitch and bring out the best of him. And unfortunately, we didn't see the best of him until he was forced back into duty 12 weeks into the season after getting benched for playing like he did in 2019, the first 3 weeks of the season and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I actually got into a real bad back and forth with a former listener of mine because I was, you know, wasn't letting Mitch off the hook for how he was playing, you know. And it was like, well, it's more Nagy than it is Mitch. It's like, that might be true, but he's still got to run the plays that Nagy is calling. So it's, you know, if he's not out there and he's not doing the job, you know, like the first half of that Lions game, I was ready to drive out to Detroit and shoot Mitch dead. Like, I didn't want to sit through another 2019 again. I just wasn't willing to do it. You know, like, I was, my knee jerk reaction after the first half of the first game was, get him out of there now. Get Nick Foles in there to help. There's no way that Foles was worse than this in training camp. There's no way. Put Foles out there. Let's see what happens. And, of course, he had his heroic fourth quarter that saved a job for 2 weeks, or a week and a half, I should say. You know, he has that great first half against the Giants, and then the second half was terrible. And then he starts off cold again against the Falcons, throws that pick in the third quarter. And, honestly, I wasn't expecting him to get yanked when he did, but I wasn't surprised that it happened.
It just seemed like not only this season, especially this season, but even throughout, like, everyone always wanted to make it, well, it's either Matt Nagy's fault or Mitch Trubisky's fault. Like, right. It didn't seem like there was room
for this. It's collaborative, Lauren. I mean, come on. It's the word of the day. You know, I feel like Pee Wee's Playhouse. Every time somebody says collaborative, we should all start screaming.
Yeah, scream real loud, yeah.
Yeah.
It's so you miss so much of, like, the context and the gray area in between. Like, it was clearly both, right? I mean, it's,
yeah.
And you can argue maybe who deserves more, but, like, neither one of them is innocent. Like, the people that believe Trubisky is this great quarterback that is being held back by Matt Nagy, you're missing the Trubisky
evaluation.
You'll love this,
because when this guy was making his case for Trubisky, he said, and I quote, that deer in the headlights look that he makes is just what he looks like when he's concentrating. I was like, that's what you got?
That's what you're bringing?
That's what it sounds like. And then he sent me another nasty email when Mitch came back and he was playing well. That's like, well, you know, I think he needed to be benched in order to play this way. I honestly do. You know, he won the job in training camp, which was pretty much his to lose because of COVID. Like, who knows how differently that would have gone if we had a regular offseason and Foles has the time to build chemistry with everybody and is taking equal snaps and with the first team and all that kind of stuff. But I just felt like the guy that we saw the first 3 weeks and the guy that finished the season were two completely different guys, that the benching and everything that he had to sit through and watch and stomach and get frustrated with made the guy that we saw in the second half of the year.
Yeah, he definitely came out with a lot more confidence and, like, conviction and understanding of the offense. And I wonder if some of that, too, is just watching Nick Foles run the offense, seeing somebody else do it in your building, throwing to your receivers behind your offensive line with your coaches. It's one thing to watch tape of Kansas City, you know, but that's, it's the same offense or whatever, but it's a different feel. And this isn't just like Chase Daniel filling in for a game, but watching someone who has a lot of experience and has had a lot of success in this offense, and somebody who can take charge with Nick Foles. And like Trubisky started speaking up more in terms of like meetings and what he wanted, because I'm guessing he watched Nick Foles be unafraid to call out Matt Nagy, you know, and say, All right, we got to do things differently. And I think Trubisky benefited from watching Foles, even though Foles wasn't always playing at a super high level. There was a benefit there. But I do still feel like it's generally the same quarterback with this. I mean, he still had a lot of the same flaws. It was just He had a different... He carried himself differently as a result of the benching. And that it led to improved play because there was more confidence and there was better understanding of the offense and more of an ownership of it.
Yeah, and then it kind of goes back to that comment that he made about the culture and what you're willing to accept. I think before, he was willing to accept the orders of his coaches and what he did, not realizing that it was just as much a part of him saying what he wanted to do, which is probably what he did learn from Nick Foles. It's like, dude, you got to speak up. If this is what you want to run, if this is what you feel like you can run best, then you got to tell them that. And they'll listen to you. You go out there, you show them, you do it in practice or whatever, and think like, you got to step up and say something, not just be the good soldier and do what you're told. It's, you know, that's part of it, but it's not all of it. And I think that it was necessary for him to do that. And then, you know, a couple more before I let you go here. I know we're running long here, but like we always do, but where do you fall on the thought? Because I had a buddy of mine ask me, is the season any different if Mitch plays the whole season? Like if they stuck with Mitch and we ride through all the way to where we are now, how many more games do we win? My answer to him was zero. I didn't think we win any more games than we do. As a matter of fact, because I thought the benching was so essential to who he became in the second half of the year, I think there's actually a game or two that we lose. Like, I don't think we beat Tampa Bay if Mitch is the quarterback of that game.
Yeah, as soon as you said that question, I kind of thought, yeah, they might lose more games had they not made that change. Although, I mean, I wonder if, you know, you'd say you don't bench Mitch Trubisky in week three, then you start to have the offensive line troubles. I mean, part of what happened with Nick Foles was, you know, the offensive line was injured in front of him, and then COVID hit the offensive line, and then Foles got hurt, and Trubisky came back and got the job back and kept it. But, like, you wonder if Foles hadn't come in right away, and maybe Trubisky starts the first 8 or 10 weeks, and Foles comes in after the bye week, maybe with that offensive line combination. If you don't get a very different Foles experience over the second half of the season compared to the Foles experience that we got, and maybe a very different Mitch Trubisky experience over those games. I mean, maybe you don't beat Tampa Bay, but maybe you beat Green Bay in one of those. I mean, you know what I mean? Like, so many different ways. I mean, if you assume that you start Trubisky all 16 games, I don't know that you win 8 games this season. But if you if you go back in time and reverse the Mitch Trubisky benching in week 3, and then maybe Trubisky gets benched later in the season and Foles has a different dynamic, maybe you have more of a different outcome than the other hypothetical.
Yeah, because I just like with all things being equal, and you look at, you take everything at face value for what it was at the time. Like, I don't think we beat Green Bay because it was a lot of Foles and his poise that got us where we were at the end of that game, that led that game-winning drive to the Cairo Santos field goal. And then, you know, I certainly don't – we were horrible against the Rams. I think that one could have been an even bigger disaster with Mitch out there trying to make something happen where there was nothing and throwing more interceptions than and things like that. You know, it just – you know, and I don't think we take the Saints to overtime in that game as well. So there's a lot of things that I don't see happening with Mitch out there because of the Mitch that was, you know, wasn't quite as confident and wasn't speaking up and wasn't taking charge and control of his fate in the offense. And then it's like the last 6 weeks of the season, he's been like, screw it, man. I'm probably out of here anyway, so I'm going to do whatever the hell I want, or I'm going to do what I know how to do, or I'm going to speak up and say something. What's the worst that's going to happen? What are they going to do? Bench me? They already did that, and you know, they saw that didn't work out, so they're stuck with me now. So we're going to do this my way. And for the first 5 weeks or so, that it looked like that worked out just fine.
Yeah, it was so critical, I think, for Mitch Trubisky's future. I mean, to improve his. I mean, I realized that he didn't win a lot enough games, and I think it ended on a low enough point with the Packers and Saints losses that he's not like drastically changing anybody's mind. But I think he made himself some money this offseason. Mm-hmm. He's not going to go somewhere to be signed instantly as their guaranteed week one starter, but maybe he goes somewhere and competes to start as opposed to going somewhere as purely the backup. You know, like more like Marcus Mariota to the Raiders type deal than the, you know, Chase Daniel to the Lions type deal.
Right. Yeah. Agreed. Wouldn't it be funny if he went to San Francisco to compete with Garoppolo?
I mean, it wouldn't be a terrible fit. I mean, the way that system helps quarterbacks.
I mean, like the way that I hear, it'd probably be the best fit for him to go out to San Francisco because they run the ball a lot more. They're killer. But basically, they're what we want the Bears to be, or traditionally. They're a run-first kind of offense. They're staggering on defense, which might also change because their defensive coordinator is going to be a head coach somewhere next year.
I'd like to see Mitch as Lamar Jackson's backup in Baltimore.
Interesting.
See him run that offense a little bit. I mean, he's not as fast as Lamar, but, like, that's a very run-first, you know, and that's a team that doesn't require their quarterback to be an elite field-reading pocket passer all the time. That, you know, you can that's a team that has been able to maximize the mobile quarterback in that way. That I think it'd be fun to see Mitch. I mean, he wouldn't be competing to start there. It wouldn't be the ideal opportunity for him in that regard. But
he's an upgrade from Robert Griffin, for sure.
And the Penn State kid, Trace McSorley, was their other backup, too.
Oh, dear God. Yes, definitely. Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks again to Larry Dyer from Bears Talk Underground for joining us on the podcast today. If you enjoyed our conversation, make sure you subscribe to Locked On Bears to keep up with all of our daily, in-depth Chicago Bears news and analysis. You can also hear more of Larry and I's conversation on his podcast, the full multi-hour discussion going over all things 2020 Bears and also 2021 Bears. That's the Bears Talk Underground podcast. We'll be back on Monday to keep trudging forward with the start of the offseason. We'll dive into some Bears defensive coordinator candidates a little more deeply. We'll look at what kind of decisions are ahead and what the Bears should do to try and right this ship and turn it around, even with Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy still calling the shots. It's going to be a long offseason with no Chicago Bears football. I appreciate you joining us for the ride, I promise. We'll make it bearable and we'll make it much easier to bear down.